Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely amazing. That is one of my favorite childhood songs right there. I'm saying that I don't mean to make my guests feel older. Who's about to come on here and bless the airwaves, but my goodness, that's Stevie Wonder, right? And that's like, what is going on here? But anyway, we get ready to get into this. We're going to have a great conversation with Mr. Raymond Lee Pounds today. So you guys just make sure you get in your seats and get ready for this history lesson. Because for me, that's exactly what it is. This is a man that's been doing this all of my life. I've been listening to him forever. And the surprising thing is that he's one of my childhood heroes that I never knew, because I didn't recognize the name. I was just a kid and was in love with this music that he was doing. And so here it is years later, and I get the blessing to speak with him and talk with him in front of you guys, because a lot of the questions that I want to ask him, you know, you will hear the answer immediately coming from him. So kick back, relax. Hello to all of our friends around the world. Much love. Thank you so much for tuning in to Solar Records Radio. This is Wardell Potts Jr. I'll be your host today, and my partner Don Fleming will be in a little later, but much love and God bless you guys. And I'm so excited to bring on our guest today as we are tuned into Indie Blues and All That Jazz Day here on Solar Records Radio. Every Wednesday we love to play that, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start off with that song, because you know, you don't think, when you think of Stevie Wonder, you don't think about jazz. So we're going to have our guest come on right now and share with us about how all this is happening and stuff. Mr. Raymond Lee Pound, are you there, my friend?
Wardell, I'm here. So glad to be here with you.
Oh, wow. What an honor it is to have you. And, you know, I'm shaking in my boots and stuff. So, Mom, you hear him, right? He's right here. My mom is tuned in, too. So it's a very special day for me to be able to speak with you, sir, and just learn about your history. And so I'm excited that you came on. And like I said, I don't really do this that often, where it's just like, as soon as I talk to someone, I'm like, I got to get them on the radio now. Exactly what happened.
Wardell, yes, can I say one to your listeners?
Yes, sir.
I want your listeners to know that you, Wardell Potts Jr., is one of my favorite drummers. I've loved Wardell's drumming for decades.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. You know, wow, that is so cool. And it's so, you know, and we have the same feeling. It's a mutual feeling. And that's why I was so grateful to get you on. And so thank you so much. And I want you to just take us down memory lane here. I want us to give us the picture of who you were, how you got started. And I know it's a long story, right? But if you know, just take your time and just share it the way that you want to share it. Like, how did you become a drummer? What inspired you? Were there other drummers that inspired you, or was somebody in your family a musician? How did that all get started for you?
Remember that song, Louie Louie? When I heard that song, I said, I want to be a drummer.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because at school, they had a talent show, and I was in the seventh grade, and the band at school played Louie Louie. And they had a drummer, and he had a red metal flake drum set.
Uh-huh.
And I thought being a drummer was the coolest thing on earth. So,
right.
I wanted to be a drummer when I was 13 years old.
Oh, wow. So what happened? I mean, when you decided that you wanted to be a drummer, what happened from that point?
Well, my brother tried to have a band, and they had rehearsals at my house, and I watched the drummer play, and after 5 or 6 months, I could do everything that the drummer in the band was doing.
Oh my God.
And I was 13, and a bass player named Richard Taylor started taking me to jam sessions with him on Sunday afternoon, and at the end of the jam session, they would let me play. And after a month of doing the jam sessions,
mm-hmm.
the bass discovered that I could not read music. And he decided to take me and find a drum teacher. He took me to a guy named Clarence Johnston in Los Angeles, and asked Clarence Johnson, he asked Clarence if Clarence would give this young kid lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, so from age 13 till 18, I had my lessons from Clarence Johnson.
Wow,
every Saturday, I had my drum lesson, and the place, the music school that I took my lessons from, they had a grown-up big band that would rehearse from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and then they had a youth band that would rehearse at 5 o'clock until 6:30. So after taking a year of lessons, I became the drummer of the youth band. So I played big band drums every Saturday, and that's how I, got my ability to play jazz.
Wow. So what was... Yes. I mean, so, I wanted to try to get in even more in your mindset. So what happened with the learning of the reading? Did that influence you to want to play jazz more than wanting to play pop R&B? Because, I mean, you said the song that was a pop song that you heard, that Louie song. But you ended up wanting to play jazz.
I love music. My brother, my big brother, was 10 years older than me, and he had a record collection, and starting at age 6 or 7 years old, I heard music in my home all the time. So... I like all music. I like jazz, and so I would listen to the local jazz station. I listen to the rhythm and blues or the R&B station, and emulated what I heard on the radio, and emulated what I saw on every Saturday, watching the big band rehearse, and then waiting for the youth big band to play. So I just watched other people, watched older players play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I listened to all the latest jazz records with Max Roach and Tony Williams and Art Blakey and Elvin and Mel and Chico Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
And,
Yes, that's good. That is good. That is good for the soul right there. Where did you grow up at?
In Los Angeles. I'm from Michigan, but I left Michigan in 1959 when I was 7 years old. So I grew up in Los Angeles.
Okay. All right, so now you got this jazz thing going. You're reading now. You're capable. You can play with anybody. Because now, not only do you have the skills, but now you can read on top of it. So what is next for you?
Well, when I was 16 years old, I could read everything. I could read anything and everything. And I joined the Don Ellis Orchestra when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
Don Ellis's orchestra played a lot of odd meters, 7/8, 5/4 times, 9/8.
Yes.
So I did that, and I just played all around Los Angeles, anywhere I could play, and played some of everything.
Now, is that orchestra, was that a jazz orchestra? Or traditional?
Yes, it was.
Oh, was it jazz?
A place, a big band at called Grant's Music Center in Los Angeles. It was the biggest music center in Los Angeles. And all the latest black artists, when they would come to town, they would use Grant's Music Center to rehearse. And like I said, every Saturday, there was a band. The leader was a guy named Roger Spotts, and they had a big band every Saturday from 2 to 5 o'clock, and they played jazz charts. And I watched and listened. And then at 5 o'clock, the youth band would do the same thing. We would play big band music. Mm. And I did that. I played with that big band for about four years. So that was excellent training.
Yes. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, wow. So, you know, what started happening to you? How did you end up going from doing that to playing R&B? Did somebody say, hey, would you play in our band? Or were you curious about wanting to play R&B music since you've been playing jazz all this time? How did you get into R&B?
Well, the musicians, which were older, they noticed this young drummer that was good. And and they started taking me around to do gigs with them. I didn't have a car. They would pick me up and bring me to the gigs or to the rehearsals. I thought, okay, I learned that playing R&B was no joke. I thought the jazz was the best thing ever. And but when I did a couple of those R&B gigs, that's when I learned to respect R&B because it's very physical, you know, with jazz.
Yes.
You can play jazz, and you can drop the bass drum in here and there. You can, you know, but rhythm and blues, R&B, you have to hit that snare on 2 and 4 all the time. You can't miss any. You have to also play bass drum patterns like boom, tap, boom, boom, tap, boom, tap, doom, doom, tap, doom, doom, tap, boom, boom, tap. And, hey, man, when you had to do that consistently, my first gig, by the second hour of the gig, I was tired. My leg was hurting. My back was hurting. Hitting that beat on 2 and 4,
right. My left hand.
Skin started peeling off of my finger. And boy, this R&B, boy, this is no joke. You know?
I know it.
So you had to go and prep and get some stamina.
Right. Right.
I can play R&B pretty good, but then along came funk, you know? And I never forget when I was about, I don't know, 17 or 18, I had been playing a little R&B and mainly jazz. I got a gig with the Silvers. You know the Silvers?
You know I know the Silvers.
Okay. I got the gig with the Silvers.
What? What year was this?
Oh, man, I can't think of the name. It must have been...
Okay, that's okay.
68, probably 68. And yeah. we played, and after the first gig, Al McKay, the bass, the guitar player with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Right.
You know,
I know Al.
I know Al.
Yes.
Al McKay wrote September. He wrote Serpentine Fire. You know, a bunch of he's the guitar player. This is before. This is before Earth, Wind, and Fire. We were all musicians playing gigs around town.
Wow.
Well, when I got on the Silvers gig, we were playing at the Coconut Grove at the hotel down on Wilshire. Make a long story short, after we played the first night on the gig, with mm-hmm. With the silk, Al McKay said, "Pounds, you can play some jazz, but you can't play funk." That hurt my feelings. He said, "Man,
I know it's hurt my feelings."
He said, "You can play jazz. You can play that jazz sound, but you can't play no funk. You need to go somewhere and learn how to play funk." Because you are not playing funk right.
My. Oh, man. You're killing
James Gaston also said to me, he tried to say it in a nice way. James Gaston, so he said, "Listen, you know, you probably can't do the 16th on the hi-hat because, I can do it because I've been doing it longer than you." But, Al McKay stayed on me. Al said, "Man, you need to go somewhere and learn how to play funk." Well, so I started going around to After Hours Club watching the funk bands play. And that, by watching how it's done and seeing someone play funk, then you begin to understand what you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep.
If you want to play jazz, you have to go and watch people play jazz so that you can learn how it's done. If you're playing country western music, you have to go and watch country western musicians play. Whatever you play, it doesn't just come out of thin air. You have to go watch someone who does it and learn it.
Yes, sir.
But that's how it happened. But I was working a lot because I could read and pretty much play every style. But whenever you weren't doing something right, when you're young, back in the day, let me see, 1966. 67, 68. I was playing gigs around town. I was working Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, and sometimes Saturday after hours. Well, different bands would hire me, and different musicians would pull your coat, as they say. They would teach you things. Well, when I was on one gig, I learned that I didn't know how to play a shuffle. A guitar player, a guy named Roy, the band was Roy and the Creators. Well, Roy said after the gig was over one night, he says, listen, young blood. He said, "Listen, I'm going to teach you how to play a shuffle." Because I did not know. I thought I was doing a shuffle. Boom, pop, do, pop, do, pop, do, pop. Well, taught me a full shuffle. I don't know if you know about that.
Well, tell me.
He taught, shuffle. That's where the ride cymbal and the snare drum hand, they both play the same thing. And you add two and four, but the other beats, you play them softly. So you got So he taught me a full shuffle. He taught me like a different, he taught me different versions of the shuffle. So there's a rock and roll shuffle. Probably the best example is that is Jeff Porcaro playing Rosanna.
Oh yeah, woo boy, he's riding that thing.
There's different shuffles. There's an old time blues shuffle.
Okay.
There's the full shuffle,
mm-hmm.
and there are different bass drum patterns with any given shuffle. You can play a shuffle, and you can play all four beats on the bass drum.
Yes.
Or you can play the bass drum on one and on three.
Mm-hmm.
You can play a shuffle, and you can play boom, 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 boom. There's
right.
different shuffles that you can play.
Right, right.
So
wow.
So you learn because at that time there was a lot of music being played. There was no drum machine. There was no, you know, there was no DJ at the club. There was live music. So you go
mm-hmm.
around. You watch different drummers play. And the drummers that would come in town just to a jazz club, and they would play Shelley's Manhole, they would play at Marty's on the Hill, they would play different jazz clubs, and someone different would come to town. Okay, Max Roach comes to town with his band, and he
oh,
would do
boy.
A week or two. Then next week, here comes Miles Davis with Tony
oh.
Williams. Next
oh,
week,
my
goodness. Next week, here comes Jack DeJohnette. So you're seeing all these guys, and you get those records. You listen to records. You listen
mm-hmm.
to
as yes, sir.
Records all the time. You listen
yes.
to all the
Steady.
That you could get your hand on.
Right. Well, I just went.
You go to the record, get friendly with the guy at the record stop, and ask him, did you play this one and let me hear it? Because I would go to and hang out at the record shop. And I was crazy about Elvin Jones. And I would look through the records and try to find everything on Blue Note or Impulse or all the record labels. Try to find everything that had Elvin Jones on it.
Yes.
And, you know, You copy and emulate, and you listen it, and you listen over and over. That way, Wardell, you have an arsenal in your head of licks, things that you can play, things that you are in your brain from you listening to so many different people play.
Right, right.
So you put in time. Go ahead. I don't want to talk at all.
For those who just may have tuned in, I just want you to know that we are having a wonderful session. Hey, I'm calling it a session because I'm speaking with an amazing professional drummer by the name of Raymond Lee Pounds. And so thanks for tuning in today. We are just enjoying this conversation. And I am truly enjoying it because this is – I'm listening to – my childhood hero talk about how he became a professional drummer. And my story is parallel to his. It's just a generation later. So this is just amazing information for me, and I do appreciate you, sir, coming on. And man, oh man, I'm such a fan. I want to go back to something that you said in regards to the Silvers and Al McKay. Now, when you were talking about the Silvers and you played with the Silvers, and then Al McKay said to you that you're not really into the funk. You need to learn how to play the funk. Was that after you played with the Silvers, or was that before you played with the Silvers?
That was after the first weekend with the Silvers.
The first weekend.
What it was, Ralph Johnson, the drummer who's a member of Earth, Wind, and Fire right now, Ralph Johnson had the gig with the Silvers.
Okay.
And Ralph had something else that he couldn't do 3 weeks with the Silvers at the Coconut Grove at the Ambassador Hotel. So it was Ralph Johnson's gig, and he gave it to me. I covered or subbing. I was a substitute drummer for Ralph Johnson with the Silvers.
Right.
And we played Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And for
the
1 month.
Right.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Coconut Grove. Dick Griffey was the manager and the promoter of the Coconut Grove. Yeah. So he was Frida Payne was the headliner. The Silvers opened for Frida Payne. Frida Payne was the biggest than the Silvers.
No wonder. Now I see how Edmund ended up with her.
Okay. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I subbed. I did three weeks, but after the first night, the first gig, I did Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and that's when Al McKay said, "Man, well, actually, he started on my case. I played Friday night." And Saturday night after the gig, after we were done, he said, "Pounds, you can't play no funk. You can play jazz, but you can't play no funk, man."
Wow.
No.
And so that was after the first weekend.
Yeah. And he said, Sunday night, he said it again. "Pounds, you can play that jazz.
No.
You can't
that's
play
painful.
No funk."
Painful.
Oh, that's I mean, nobody likes to be criticized. I don't care who you are.
Right.
Nobody likes to be criticized. Nobody wants to be told that they are not doing something correct. You know?
Right.
Everybody's got their little ego and got their, nobody likes to get criticized. And so,
at this time, Earth, Wind, and Fire had not come in to their own yet, right? Were they not a group yet?
Not yet.
Wow.
That's why they were not in existence yet.
Okay.
Johnson was playing at the Maverick Flat. That was his gig with a group called the Master's Children. And back in the day, Wardell, when you had a job or a gig at a club, it wasn't just for one night. A gig that you had usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You got four nights.
Right.
And usually you keep the
gig.
You keep a gig about 3 months, and then, you know, the club says, okay, we're going
to
make a change now. But,
right.
You know, now the way it is now and in recent years, hey, man, you get one night. You know?
And we're going to make a change. What?
Just one night. One night.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
All the local gigs around Los Angeles now, you know, Spaghettini or whatever the club is, everybody just has one night.
That's weird. That's crazy, man. And so I remember exactly, because growing up in Philadelphia, and I used to play at a place, I can't think of the name of the club. Oh, Hollywood Palace down in West Philly. And we used to, every weekend, we had that place. Every weekend. So it was like, that was our gig every weekend. Like you were doing every weekend. We were too. And then, like you said, about 3 months in, you know, they want to make a change. And sometimes they did make a slight change, but for the most part, we were making the change for them. Like we would change singers. And all of a sudden it's a new band. And so, but anyway, listen, I got to just tell you, first of all, this information is so amazing. This conversation is so deep for me. I hope my musician friends are listening to this, because this is just, you know, they can really relate to it. And my other friends who love music, you can appreciate it too. So thank you so much, Raymond, for sharing this amazing insider information, because now we're talking pre-Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, but Earth, Wind & Fire was there. The drummer from Earth, Wind & Fire gave him his gig with the Silvers, and y'all know Leon Silvers, who I used to work with. I talk about him all the time. And so, and the Silvers were, they had to be like really young. How old were they?
I think Leon is the oldest one.
Right. Well, yeah, yes. So
I think Leon is oldest one, and I think at that time, Leon was probably 20.
Wow.
21, you know? They were young. Everybody else, Foster was probably 9 or 10. You know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah,
That's great. So then, after, you know, that moment of, you know, rediscovering yourself, like, okay, all right, I'm a great jazz drummer, but, you know, I'm learning the funk. So once you got the funk down, then what was the next step for you? Where did you go after that? Because I'm trying to figure out, how did you start recording? So when did all of that started happening for you, when you started actually recording?
Okay. I started doing small recordings with people around Los Angeles. And,
I'm okay. Just checking.
He was in a little earlier than me. He started recording before me, because James Gatson was the drummer that was the one that was getting the work. But
yes.
I started getting some local recordings. I think the first record that I played on was a album called Spring Rain by Rudolph Johnson. He's a saxophone player. And Rudolph Johnson, there's a guy named Gene Russell. He was the producer, and he started a record label called Black Jazz. The label was called Black Jazz, and I played on, that was my first record. It was like 1969, 70, 71. But when that album came out, it was a hit. And Rudolph Johnson's Spring Rain was on the radio, KJLA, the jazz station. Everybody played Rudolph Johnson's album, different cuts on every show on the radio. And that was the day when the DJ, the radio DJ, would announce everybody's name.
Oh, nice.
And I got famous in Los Angeles.
Wow.
Because the DJs, they said Raymond Pounds on drums, and a couple of them had fun with a drummer named Pounds. You know,
right,
like,
right,
hey,
right.
He really pounds those drums, or he, you know.
Yes, yes.
So, and I was working with John Barnes, the keyboard guy.
Uh-huh.
We worked all around Los Angeles. We had a Monday night gig at Pips up on Sunset. We had a four night a week. We were the house band of a place called The Apartment, owned by Dick Griffey.
Oh, wow.
And so
Dick
after
was getting
I, doing that, I got the Black Jazz label album, Rudolph Johnson, and then Chester Thompson, the organ player from Power, he did an album on the Black Jazz label. So I'm on two hot albums on the Black Jazz label. So my name is getting around.
Yes.
I'm,
now,
did you
what?
On those
you
two
what?
Albums,
uh-huh.
I'm burning. I'm on fire.
Really?
My drumming, hey man, I'm not,
Ooh,
you know, I'm not.
I gotta get.
Bragging. I, you know.
We can still get a copy of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And on my page, I got all that stuff.
Okay.
Put on my, my Facebook page.
Right.
I post all the recordings that I think are really good that I've done. So,
okay.
I don't
Raymond Lee
post
Pounds on Facebook.
I don't post anything that's not good.
Okay.
So
did you, let me ask you a question. Did you know that Dick Griffey was a drummer?
Yeah. Listen, Dick Griffey, when I got with Stevie Wonder, Dick Griffey was the promoter of Stevie Wonder's our first tour.
Hold on. How did you get with Stevie Wonder? How did you even get there?
Let me see. Stevie Wonder had an accident that almost took his life.
Ooh.
Let me shorten the story up.
Okay.
The whole band quit because he didn't work for 2 years. So he was putting the band back together. So Hugh Masekela, the South African
Ooh.
Trumpet player.
I know him. I produced him.
Okay. Well, Hugh Masekela was friends with Stevie Wonder. And so Hugh Masekela was friends with the Crusaders, Dick Hooper. And so Hugh Masekela mentioned to Six Hooper, he said, Stevie's looking for a new young drummer. Do you know anybody? And Six Hooper said, send this guy. And so I went over to I didn't know how to get up into the Hollywood Hills. So they met me, the bass player, Reggie McBride, met me on Sunset near La Brea at a hotel there.
Mm-hmm.
And I parked my car and we drove up into the hills to Stevie Wonder's house.
Mm-hmm. Now right there, Sunset and La Brea. Man, that's a high road coming up to Sunset on La Brea.
I mean, Sunset and Highland. That's not in the hills yet. But anyway,
okay.
Red McBride drove me up to Stevie Wonder's house,
mm-hmm.
and we get to the gate. And this blind Stevie Wonder comes out and walked over to the gate. He had the key. He unlocked the gate and opened it up. I said, this dude ain't blind. Because he opened that gate. And so he said, so as we walked into the house, he said, listen. If you don't play good, we're going to kick your ass.
So he's always been a comedian.
Yeah. Said, if you don't play good, we're going to kick your ass.
Oh, my God, Stevie.
Listen, man, I was really, I said, listen, I didn't come up here to F around. Let's go. We went in. There was a drum set there. And at that time, I was really into Stevie Wonder's drumming. I had Music of the Mind, Talking Book, and Inner Vision, okay? And he played all the drums on all those three albums.
Wow.
And when I heard his drumming, I said, who is this? And I said, oh, it's Stevie Wonder. He's bad, man. He's a good drummer. And he's got his own kind of his own concept. So, let me shorten it. I knew his song. I knew his style. I had stole many licks from him.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were playing, I'm killing it.
Right.
I'm killing it. And he's going like crazy. And so he called me every day to come up, and I went up there, and we played every day from 1 in the afternoon to about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, every day.
Nice.
Just the bass player, Reggie McBride, me and Stevie for the first week. Every day we played. We would play different Stevie Wonder songs. And I watched him write songs every day. Every day, I watched him write three or four songs every day. And And I said, oh, this is what a genius does.
Right. You got the inside scoop.
That's what a genius does,
right?
Three to four songs every day, and each song is great and it's different.
Wow.
You know, most people,
that's a lot of information right there. There's a lot going on in his brain.
Sounding alike. They sound Barry White.
Yeah.
After you listen to Barry White, they start sounding the same.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But that's what I got with Stevie. I went there every day, and we played. And then the second week, he he flew in his guitar player, Michael Cimbello. So we played every day. And then into the second week, he said, he called me, because he used to call me every day. He said, listen, I want you to come to the studio. I'm in the studio. He was at the record plant. I didn't know about overdubbing. I didn't know you can punch in, you know?
Mm. Okay.
I got to the studio, and he was in there laying down a drum track. And whenever he would make a mistake, he would stop and click his sticks together. The engineer would wait while Stevie worked out his lick. And then he'd say, okay. And then the engineer would start to take and punch him in again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, how he does. He punches in over and over.
That's all Leon used to do.
Yeah. So we recorded. He recorded. He was going to the studio almost every day, and that was it. I didn't know that what we were doing was working on songs in the key of life. I didn't know he was writing songs, you know. So see, we did about 400 songs.
Wow.
For songs in the key of life, we recorded like 400.
No way.
There's only 22 songs on that double album. But we were going to the studio, we were recording, and that's how, I didn't know that's what we were working on.
Wow.
But after we were putting the band together, we had to audition another guitar player. We had to get background girls. We had to find a bass player because Reggie McBride quit and joined Rare Earth, that group from Motown.
Wow!
Hold on. After rehearsing a couple of months, got the band together. We did a tour of the United States from it was a 3-month tour.
Wow.
June to Christmas. That's how long it was. But Dick Griffey was the promoter.
Lord, Dick Griffey was all over the place.
Okay, and so I
gracious.
And so, sometimes we would fly. Sometimes we would ride on the bus. So I used to sit with Dick Griffey and we would talk.
Wow.
He would, you know, we got to know each other. We ended up really good friends. He told me about he used to be a drummer, and that his favorite drummer was Philly Joe Jones from Philly.
Yes. That was mine too. My favorite, one of my favorite drummers is Philly Joe Jones.
Okay.
One of my favorites. I had a lot of favorites.
Yeah, Dick Griffey. So I sat with him and picked his brain, and we talked. He would tell me about promoting a tour and all these different things, and sometimes Cary Lucas would come and spend a week or so on tour with us.
Oh, wow. That was a beautiful lady.
Yeah, so even when one time we went to Japan, at the end of that whole United States tour, after that 1 year, in January we went to Japan. I went to Hawaii and Japan, and Cary went with us. So she was there. She watched the show every night. One of the girls got sick on the tour, and Cary took her place for a few concerts.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
By the way, So. What else
do you want to know? Go ahead,
Raymond. Hold on, wait one second, Raymond, because I want to play one of the songs that you worked on with Stevie Wonder, and then we're going to be right back. Just got to take a small music break, guys, and we'll be right back. And, man, oh, man, I am loving this conversation with this living legend here, Mr. Raymond Lee Pounds on Solar Records Radio. God bless you, man, and thank you for sharing so much of your story. We appreciate you. We'll be right back. And check him out here on this here song with Stevie Wonder on Solar Records Radio. This is called I Wish. There we go. That's absolutely amazing, man. I remember trying to play all that stuff. I mean, I actually used to play that song all the time.
Too drunk. Oh,
Yes, I used to play your feels all the time, man. Just like you were copying other people's feels, I was copying yours. So my man, how did it feel for you when that song came out? You're like, oh, that's what. And how old were you guys around that time?
Man, we were young. Listen, we were about Steve is 2 years older than me. But at that time, we were like 24. We were young, no children,
yes.
No wife. We were just fun. He was.
Woo!
We hung,
that was good.
We every day, the group Wonderlove rehearsed and wrote songs. And every night, Stevie would come to the studio about anywhere between 6 and 7:30 and record all night, sometimes 4 o'clock, sometimes 5 a.m.
Well, yeah.
But he was going to the studio every day, every
mm-hmm.
night. And, listen, it was so many songs and... Every time we think we got the album lineup, and I come back the next day, he goes, "We got a new song, and I'm going to replace this other one." After that, I said, "So you have to hang around. You have to be there, or you might not get on."
Miss out, right.
You know, he kept taking songs off that I played on.
Wow!
Finally, I went to him and I said, "Listen, Steve." Listen, please, I have to be on this album. I said, listen, man, we've been working on this album for 3 years, and everybody in the music world knows that we have been working on this album. So this album cannot come out, and I'm not on it. I said, please. I said, listen, man, don't do me like that. I said, if I'm not on this album, I'll be hurt, be embarrassed, and I will be angry. So I said, listen. I said, come on, MF. Don't do me like that, Steve. He said, don't worry, he's going to be on it. And so, you know, I'm so thankful because, hey, on side A are my three songs.
Yeah.
And two of them were number one.
Yes.
For 15 weeks in a row.
Wow.
I thanked him because, listen, man, he don't let drummers play on his records.
Wow. Because he does it. He can do it himself.
Music of the mind, talking book, fulfilling this first finale, inner vision, Mink finding no drummer but Stevie Wonder.
Wow. That is amazing, man. What an accomplishment for you. I like that conversation. Are you like Steve?
Don't do me like that, man. Cause, you know, I'm not Ollie Brown, you know, and other drummers before me and drummers after me and all that, man. Listen, my heart can't take it, man. I can't be I can't be your drummer, and you put out an album with 22 songs on it, and I'm not on it, man.
Right, I thought. Well, yeah. Wow.
You know,
so
Kravitz.
What's that?
You know, Lenny Kravitz. He did an album. He played the drums. And he's got a drummer, man. Don't do that stuff, man. Can I play on one?
Come on, yeah. Stop playing around, man. Oh man. Okay. Listen. So I just want to say thank you again
And we're going to do a part two to this, right? We have to, because you have so much information you said you want to share. And so I'm just loving it, first of all. And I'm really blessed that you have came on and shared this story. I want to ask you about this, another song you played on that album, Sir Duke. Can you tell us something about that? Is there a story you got behind that? I mean, just playing on these records, it just makes me crazy. You can just tell me just about the session. I'm good.
Listen, man, Sir Duke, at that time, Wonder Love, we were, in order to earn our pay, we get a check every Thursday. So, but, you know, we weren't touring or nothing. So I guess they didn't want to pay us and we're not doing anything. So we had to rehearse first it was Monday through Saturday. And then after about a half a year of that, we said, hey, man, can we do Monday through Friday? So we rehearsed from 11 till 5 o'clock every day. And then and that's without him. That's just the band rehearsing. All we had to do was to make sure we were sharp on his song, and then we could do whatever we want to do. We could write songs together, which we did. We could, you know, anybody in the group could bring a song, and you know, you got a 10-piece band with three backgrounds to work on a song that you wrote. So one day, after we had, and see, Stevie would drop by every couple of weeks or once a week. He would show up and teach us a new song, or just play with us. Mm-hmm. One day, Duke Ellington had passed away, and so 5 o'clock, we getting ready to go home. And here comes Stevie. So, you know, go home. And so he said, hey, listen, I got a new song that I wrote for Duke Ellington called Sir Duke, and I want to teach it to you right now. So it's 5 o'clock. He taught it to us, and we were done. By 5:30, we knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, let's go to the studio and record it. I said, Steve, I'm hungry as a dog. I said, look here, man, I'm hungry. We've been rehearsing all day, and you just got here, but we hungry. I'm hungry. I said, can we go eat and then go to the studio? And he said, okay, yeah. So, we went 8 and then came to the studios about 7 o'clock, 7:15, and we recorded the track, Sir Duke. And
wow.
The horns that came later. But
what studio did y'all record in?
Crystal Sound. Crystal.
Okay.
Listen, Wardell. He had Crystal Studio blocked out for 2 years.
Blocked out. That's amazing.
You know what that means?
That's amazing.
Don't you?
Yes, I do. Because we did the same thing to Studio Masters on Sunset. I mean, on Beverly Boulevard, we blocked it out for years. Dick Griffey blocked it out for us. For years.
Yeah.
Years. Yeah, so. It was like we owned the studio.
That's right. It was blacked out. I had 3 sets of drums in there. And
Wow.
You know, nobody else used the studio because he had it blacked out. But once the owner of the studio realized, hey, Stevie doesn't record in the daytime. So I can let people use the studio in the daytime. But everybody got to get out by 5 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes he would decide to record in the daytime, and that's mm-hmm. when you know whoever had it had got
yeah,
bumped.
Had to get out. Yeah, got bumped. Yeah. Well, when you guys went to eat, did y'all go to Fatburger or did y'all go to Goldenberg?
No, went wherever they, whoever everybody went where they wanted to go.
Oh, okay.
I think I went to Sizzler over there on the break.
Oh yeah, you had the big Sizzler. Budget. That's right, big budget. We couldn't afford to go to Sizzler.
I went to Sizzler. Everybody went wherever they wanted to go. I think maybe 4 or 5 of us went to Sizzler, but and the girl went home.
Wow.
The girls went home because they didn't do their part until if they had them.
Yeah, they weren't recording, right?
I don't think they're not on Sir Duke.
Okay. All right, man. Well,
yeah.
I just want to say thank you, Raymond. You're just an honor. I mean, it's an honor for me, and you're a blessing for all of us to hear your story, man. And it's just amazing. I mean, is there anything else you want to share with us before, you know, I'm going to close out the show playing your song, Sir Duke. But is there anything else you want to share with us before we get out of here? We got about 3 minutes more, so go ahead on and take your time if there's something you want to share with any of musicians or whatever.
You know what? Maybe one time when we'll do another part two, a segment, and then we don't have to rush or anything. We might want to decide what topics you want to touch on.
Okay. Yes, sir.
There may be some specific things that you would like to know about, and you might want to get those, and so we can cover what you are interested in covering. And I hope some people can give you some. Maybe they can send you some questions.
Absolutely. I'll have them for you. I will have them for you. Yes, sir.
Listen, Wardell, I love you. And
thank you.
James,
love you,
Gasson,
too.
I told James Gasson that it was you on those records because he said, man, yeah, everybody loved the way you played on there, but we didn't know who it was.
Yeah, and I used to go when we were recording, you know, early on, like 79, when we were recording, every time I would go into the studio, and I was from Philadelphia, right? So when I got here, I really didn't know all the session cats and everything, but I used to hear James Gatson's name all the time. Oh, James, he would just finish in the studio, and then I would come in and I start recording whatever we're going to do. Because Leon used James Gatson before I got there. He was using him. And he was doing that thing where he would record himself playing the drums too, like Stevie Wonder did, would punch himself in and everything. So when I came, that was the end of punching the drums in, because I would, you know, record the whole thing all the way through. But James Gatson's name was really...
He didn't let you punch in either.
What's that?
Stevie wouldn't let me punch in.
Well, you didn't need to. You were able to do it all the way through.
He punched in, but he would not let me punch in.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I would punch Leon in when his bass part. I would
punch in, and he wouldn't let me use the click.
Oh yeah, I don't like the click. Even though I don't have a problem with it, but I don't like it. I like the natural heartbeat. I like our natural. What's that?
If you have the time, your time doesn't.
Right, right. Absolutely.
See, that's a special, Wardell. That's a special gift from God. See, a lot of people think that they. Oh yeah, I hear that. What they're doing on that, I could do that. He's not doing nothing. He ain't playing nothing. Okay.
Right.
You might think it. You might think right. it's easy. You might think
that's
that,
right.
that he's playing anything. But when they get people that think like that, when they do get a chance to go in the studio, then they find out.
Oh, really? Yeah, they don't understand, right? Like, oh my God, what's wrong? What is the problem? Dude, you keep slowing down. Dude, you keep speeding up. Dude, every time you do a fill, you're speeding it up. You know, come on. And so, yep, that's right. I know. And I, you know, when you said earlier in the interview about, you know, that R&B thing is something else. I thought it was just, you know, one, two. But, you know, you got to hold that beat, the whole song. You
really?
Know, and back in the day, those songs were not 4 minutes. They were 7 and 8 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a live version, so it's going to be longer anyway. And, you know, you got to hold that pocket. You have to be the metronome. You got to drive
right.
the train at the same time. You were driving the train. And we got to make sure our passengers are comfortable, which are the other musicians. Because if we're rushing or we're slowing down, we're making the passengers uncomfortable. It's a train, and we're driving that thing. And we are in control of how it feels. We are driving it.
And if it's not right, you're the one that gets
right.
the blame.
Exactly.
The drummer gets the blame. You can't
That's
say,
right.
oh, the bass player is dragging, or the bass player is rushing, or the guitar player over there, he's rushing, man. He's making me speed up. No, it's the drummer's fault. So
exactly.
whenever
just...
somebody, when people didn't have good time, I go into the control room and whisper in the engineer's ear, say, take that guitar player out of my phone.
Take him out, get him out, because he's in his own face.
I don't see him. He's all over the place. Turn him off, please.
But they could be seen up to, see. So for musicians to know that, we know once the pocket is established, you stay with that pocket. You don't create your own pocket. You stay in the pocket with the drummer. He's
right.
driving the groove. If you start going against him, you're going to cause an accident. You're causing it's going to make us sound like a mess. And so I got a call last week, the night before. It was a performance with 40 singers. And 12-piece horn set, strings, and all the other, you know, guitars, keyboard, and everything.
Is that the picture?
No.
That
on my page? No, that's a Good Friday picture. That's a Good Friday picture with the whole church circled across. Yeah, that's a Good Friday picture. Oh yeah, but it was the same. It looked just like that. It would look just like all those people, right? And I was like, you want me to learn 17 songs? At you just telling me in the middle of the night, and I got to play it the next day. And I was like, man, okay, but God's calling, so I got to do it. God is in control, so I said, okay, I'll do it. Just send me the stuff, and I'll learn it. So they send me the stuff. So and then I get the call from the drummer. The reason why he can't do it is because he broke his hand. He tells me the keyboard player, he's kind of rushes. He rushes a lot. So you got to hold him back. And I'm going, dude, I'm not holding nobody. I'm trying to figure out my part. Now you want me to hold and keep? You can't hold people back. They going to do what they going to do. And this is the worst part. The bass player was the one that was way out. I mean, he had no kind of pocket. He was right next to me, and he's the nicest man. He helped me throughout the whole thing, but he had no sense of pocket. He never knew what it was. He just playing it was on the paper, and I you know, so you can't I couldn't criticize him. It was just like it's just sad that people don't know.
I got to be saying anything to anybody,
right.
You know, hey man, you can't do it.
Can't do it. You just can't.
Part two, I'm going to tell you about James Brown.
Oh, yes, James Brown. That's right, the album. And so I'll make sure I have all the stuff. I'm going to play the music that you did with James Brown and tell me about that story. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Maybe next Wednesday or something. You available next Wednesday?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Next Wednesday, a week from today, guys,
yeah,
we're going to have part two.
I'm retired, man. I got my wife here. I got children. I got my grandchildren come over. You know, I'm just blessed.
Praise God.
I'm not playing no drums. I'm not going to nobody's gig, okay? Hey, and I don't miss it.
Hey, you did your part. You did your time. You good. Now you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Call me to see what you look at, what your what your time is like. Next week, let's see what you can do.
Yes, sir. All right, so we love you, man. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you for your contribution to the music industry. We really appreciate you. Thank you for putting your heart and soul into what you've done. I hear it when I listen to your solo that you sent me. I posted. You guys got to listen to him. This brother is really something to reckon with. And so thank you, man, for just, you're putting your heart and soul into your instrument and really blessing people like me and inspiring me to want to do what I did for the industry as well. So we love you, man. God bless you. I want to play this song by Sir Duke that you did with Stevie Wonder. Have a blessed rest of your day. And to your family, much love. And God bless all of you guys.
All right, Wardell. See you later.
All right, Raymond. Peace out. God bless. We'll be back. Love that, JoJo. That's my girl from the Mary Jane Girls, lead singer JoJo, putting it down. My goodness, my favorite things. And that is one of my favorite versions of my favorite things. My. And before that, we were jamming to Victor Wooten. Ah, man, oh, man, doing his thing on Solar Records Radio. And we had such a wonderful interview with him. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, you could go into our archives and check out the interview we did with Victor Wooten. It was an amazing bassist. Ooh, and a great, I mean, he loves his brothers. They have their own band, and they travel around and do that as well as his own project. So that's a beautiful thing. And I started to block off with Stevie Wonder, Sir Duke. My. That was... What an amazing interview we had with our brother, my big brother, as Raymond Lee Pounds on Solar Records Radio. Much love, Raymond. Thank you for sharing your history with us again. And we appreciate you very, very much, man. And we look forward to next Wednesday chopping it up again. We're going to do this again, part two, because he is full of history. And so we talked a lot about, you know, just who he was and how he became who he became. And then up until, you know, all the different recordings and stuff. And then his story with Stevie Wonder, which was absolutely amazing. But we didn't get a chance to talk to him about James Brown, his story with James Brown. He did an album with him as well. So we got to chop that up with him. Next Wednesday, hopefully everything works out with our schedules and stuff, and we can coordinate it and make it happen. All right, guys, so we are just going to have a great time here and enjoying the rest of this day here. We got, only 23 minutes left in the show, but the music has just been great. So let's just keep it there right here on Solar Records Radio. Much love to Greg, and they're out there, him and Phil are out there traveling around the world. You guys be safe and enjoy and do your thing. God bless you, and we miss you. And but we are, you know, everybody needs a break, right? We all need a holiday. You know, all work and no fun is no fun. You got to have that fun. So do your thing. Much love, man. All right, guys. Well, we're going to keep it going here on Solar Records. This is your boy, Wardell Potts Jr. We are. Thank you. What a beautiful song by Jean-Lou Ponty. That's called Mirage. And just, I mean, just an amazing guy on his violin is just out of control, right? I mean, come on, dude. And before that, Giant Steps. Man, oh, man, we are all just big fans of, you know, just John Coltrane himself, right, doing his thing here on Solar Records Radio. And then I started out the block with my favorite things, JoJo from the Mary Jane Girls. And so, guys, we're getting close to the end here, but we got my brother on the line. What's up? What's going on, Don Fleming?
Hey, what's going on with you?
Oh, man, oh, man. Just had a great interview, man, with Raymond Lee Pounds today, man. Wow.
Oh,
you know,
my God. I hate I missed that. I was out and about and had to take care of some business and run I got a new phone. And so I'm programming. And so it's like every time you program things into it from your last phone, you know, it's – I'm not as – I mean, I try to be tech savvy, but I'm not as tech savvy as I should be. So transferring everything from my old phone and then sending my old phone back and things like that. So I'm just going through that rigmarole and that process of this phone that they, you know, the new phone they got for me. But since this new phone is getting on my nerves already, you know, I'm probably going to go back to the brand of my phone, my old phone.
Okay.
Because it's just losing numbers, finding numbers, you know, the apps that I have to program in here. It's just been
so crazy, tedious.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's just an ongoing process of nervousness. And, you know, in that time, you know, I apologize for missing it. I'm assuming I'm going to have to check out the playback because this guy, I mean, looking at his work and who he's played drums with and, you know, from James Brown, and, you know, he has a history, and I hate I missed it.
Well, I have some good news for you.
Okay.
So today he has so much information, and today we're really trying to uncover who he is and how he became who he became. And, you know, and so we went through all that up to, you know, all the stuff he did with Stevie Wonder. So next Wednesday, we're going to have part two, and we're going to talk about his walk with James Brown.
Oh, you got to remind me. My memory. You're sharper than I am, you know, because you always make fun of, you know, being young or whatever, but I am old-minded, and some things I do have that Swiss cheese in my mind sometimes, so you got to remind me.
So next Wednesday, Raymond Lee Pounds will be back if everything works out well. He said he has no problem with it, but we're going to confirm everything over the weekend, so it's all good. Thank you for mentioning those things about him, because he's just amazing. And the other thing, it's terrible when you lose things in your phone, because some things are not recoverable, and so that would make
exactly what I'm talking about. And then try to input, for example, you know, with my job, of course, in real estate, I deal with mileage because, you know, tax reasons and things like that. So I'm using my Mile app. I was trying to transfer my Mile app into my phone, into the new phone. And again, it's just been so nerve-wracking. I finally got it. And, you know, it's one of these, it's a generic Android phone. Well, you know what? I don't say the brand. I'm sorry. But it's a generic phone. And the crazy part about it is, you know, turning it off is, you know, instead of just pressing the power down and it automatically goes off, you have to press the power down plus the volume up button. So it's just, which is ridiculous to me. So I'm saving up. I already decided I'm saving up, and I'm getting the brand of the same brand that I got with my old phone. So we can cut out all of the BS. You know, excuse my language if BS is a bad word. But no, it's been so hectic, you know, and then the fact that you got clients that, you know, I've already lost some clients because I can't go into my text records. Yeah, you can't go back. You can go back to so far, but you can't go back a long way to your text records to update your clients. Now, luckily, yep. I do have on my computer, I do have some of those clients on my computer. I can retrieve and go through that process. But, you know, going through the phone and going through text messages, I've already lost some. So, you know, there's that con of the pro of having a new phone. You know, the pros and cons. That's a con. That's a big con.
Right. Yep, that's right. Well, man, I'm happy you're getting another phone. And sorry for whatever you lost. And let's get back to the basics so we could be able to do whatever we need to do. And sorry, it's a painful experience. So I've lost numbers and I just, like, sometimes, you know, time would go by and I forgot about it and everything. And then when it pops back into my brain, the pain comes right back. Like,
you just reminded me of something. Here's another con. I'm talking to you right now on my speakerphone. I can't get my Bluetooth connected on my Bluetooth headphones. You know, so when I talk and I do shows, I do it through my Bluetooth headphone. So it's not retrieving a signal through this phone.
Oh,
so that's another reason I'm a little ticked off.
Wow, that's bad. That's bad. All right. Well, yeah. I'm sorry. I hope you can get that taken care of. Woo! Don't hurt nobody, though, Don. You got a big.
I'm just gonna save it. Like I said, I'm just gonna save up and get a new phone. And again, it's gonna be an updated version of my old phone, which was so much better.
Yeah. And it's not even funny saying you're going to save up anymore because now phones are like $1,000. Like, what?
Good grief.
It used to be like $200. Now they're $1,000. Like, what?
Now, you know, and you know, they'll add it on to the bill. They'll add it on to the bill to pay it off. But at the same time, I just want to go ahead and just pay for it.
At the same time, that's how they get you in debt with them. You know, they just like, you know, they'll make it easy for you to get in trouble. And they call it good trouble. Anyway, I'm not want to get into politics, but I was slowly getting there. I don't want to do it, but I'm happy for our brothers. They got their jobs back over there, and may God bless them. And, you know, they're back in I think, what do you call it, the Senate? Or I don't know what you call it. They in the House of Representatives over there in Michigan, I believe it was, wherever they were, and they got kicked out. I'm glad that they're back. So God bless
them. Oh, you're talking
about
the Tennessee Three.
Tennessee. Yeah, there you go. Yep. Well, it should be the Tennessee Two plus one because she didn't get fired.
No.
But anyway,
the two brothers got kicked out, but they back.
Yeah. That's why I say Tennessee too. So, but anyway, I mean, she was out there and she's trying. She's trying to do the right thing. That's what I do admire about her. That she was trying, and she even said some. You know, she was like, "Well, listen, I'm just going to tell you. I think the reason why they didn't fire me is because of my skin color, straight out." And that was cool. She was just being honest, you know. So. But, you know, Biden's
running
for president.
But did you hear and I know we got about another 5 minutes left, but what's so crazy is the tape. There was a secret audio recording of the Republicans, the Tennessee Republicans, jawing at each other, talking about, they made us look like flaming racists because we didn't even kick Gloria out. We only kicked the two out, and basically the optics of it made it look like we're a bunch of racists. So I'm just like, you guys are just so You're so dim-witted. You don't even know what you just did. But anyway, we can save this conversation for tomorrow, because I would love to get into it, because I would like to talk about Tucker Carlson getting fired. Yeah, Don Lemon too. But I'd like to talk about Tucker Carlson getting fired. And that has made my week.
Oh boy. Okay. Yes, that's I'm glad that he's gone, because I'm glad that anyone is gone that gives out false information to try to make it real. And so he was one of those people that was, you know, that was sharing false information that caused us as Americans to dislike each other. That is always wrong. You know, we already have don't even know each other, and that's enough, you know, to make you a little worried about the person. But when people put the false information on top of it, that really caused us to break. That's like the stick that broke the camel's back. It's like, you can't do that. And that's exactly what he was doing. And so it's good that, you know, that got put away, because it was disruptive. There was nothing about it that was newsworthy, and he knew it was a lie, and he continued to share it anyway. Like, what are you doing? How do you do that? How do you know it's a lie? You're even talking about it behind the scenes, and then you come out on the mic and say and promote it like it's real. Are you crazy? Mm-hmm. You're doing that to a nation. This is a nation. You're disrupting a nation, you know. And so anyway, much love, man. God bless you. And to all the listeners and stuff, thank you guys so much for tuning in to Solar Records Radio today. We appreciate you. And once again, thanks to Raymond Lee Pounds. Thank you, my brother. We'll see you next week. Greg, have a wonderful holiday travel. See you next week when you get back. And everybody, Don, thanks for calling in. We want to wish everybody a good one. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll catch you later. Solar Records Radio.